The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week we read back some messages from the mailbag provided by our loyal mail bot, Carney. Let's see. Today's episode is probably going to be heavier with Weird House Cinema responses than usual, mainly on account of the absolute deluge of messages we have received about Return to Oz. I think this may be our biggest Weird House mailbag ever.
It certainly got a lot of responses from folks, a lot of strong memories of the Return to Oz.
But before we get to that, I thought we could do a couple of messages about our episode on whistling. Let's see. Rob, I'm going to start off with some selections from an email from Lurch, who writes in a good bit. This email had a lot of good parts, but it's long, so I'm just going to pull out a couple of sections. So, Lurch writes, "When I was still young, I think this may have been before the Brothers Grimm actually wrote their books, my grandmother used to tell me stories at bedtime. One of the stories was similar to the Pied Piper story, except instead of using pipes to lure the rats and then children out of town, he whistled. I've never heard of this version elsewhere, so it may be particular to her Swedish family. Either that or Jacob and Wilhelm had their own aversion to whistling. Some years later, I served in the United States Coast Guard, coincidentally where I met my wife. On my first ship, I was happily whistling a tune on the fantail when the bosun came by and admonished me not to do that. When I asked why not, he said it was because I might whistle up a storm. He was at least half serious, adding some gruesome curlicues, krakens, sirens, and irate chiefs." Well, this is interesting in two ways. I've never heard of that version of the Pied Piper story before. I always heard of it with a pipe. I guess in my brain, I always kind of compared it to that image of the snake charmer who plays an instrument or a pipe or clarinet type instrument of some sort. And then regarding the Coast Guard, I am kind of surprised to hear so recent a story. I assume, Lurch, I know you say you are quite old, but I assume this was in the 20th century at least.
Still, it wouldn't have to be too long ago, because like we discussed, you get out on the ocean, you get into the wilds, and the modern brain kind of slips away, and you have to fall back on older patterns of thinking.
I wonder how this relates to military discipline. Like if a commander in a military command structure orders you not to do something because it may have magical ill effects, do you have to obey that order? I guess you have to obey no matter what the reasoning is, right?
I don't know. I mean, that sounds like, at least on TV, that would be grounds for mutiny, right? If your commanding officer is invoking krakens and sirens, or if not mutiny, at least like some sort of official grounds for removing them from duty.
Like if one's commander tells you to stop combing your hair because it will incite the wrath of a banshee, do you have to stop? Good questions to ponder.
Yeah, I don't know about that. All right, here's another one. This one comes to us from Pamela. Pamela writes, "Hi, Rob and Joe. I'm a longtime listener and love this show, and thank you from the bottom of my heart for not having seasons and disappearing for 2 months every 10 shows. I don't get to stop working every 2 months, so I appreciate you sticking it out with me."
Well, Pamela, I did want to have a note on this. Thank you for saying that, but also, to be fair to our peers in the podcasting space, the shows that take time off in between seasons are almost certainly not doing it because they're lazy. They've just got a different production process. They need time to develop a new season of content. We have a different production process. So just different kinds of shows.
Yeah, they also, I think a lot of podcasters out there also have various other things going on, or they have other gigs. They have like their main gig, and for us, this is our main gig. So everybody's life work balance is a little different. But anyway, Pamela continues. "Anyway, to the purpose of my message, one of the most unique whistling pieces I can think of in modern popular music is the German band Rammstein's Engel to non-German speakers. I have attached a, I was not expecting this listener mail to end up in Rammstein territory here. I have attached a link to the official music video with the whistling lead-in. What makes it so attractive and recognizable is the simplicity. Once you hear this played through, you can hear the first two notes and know what's coming." Okay, I'm going to listen to it now and see if I am familiar with this tune.
Rob is doing Rammstein research. Let's get some Rammstein research music.
Oh, all right. Okay. I just heard it. Maybe we even played a little bit of it there. That's neat. Starts with just the whistling, and then here come the beats. Here comes the industrial edge. Pamela continues, "Evidently, David Lynch was a big Rammstein early adopter and had himself, as Gordon Cole, whistle the intro to Engel in a scene in Twin Peaks, but he flutters the ending of the stanzas and ruins it. It hurts me to watch. Anyway, you guys are the best. I will be here hanging near the Capitol thinking deep thoughts with you while I listen. Take care, Pamela."
Love to get a message from I think I've said the name several different ways now. A Rammstein fan. Is it Rammstein? Rammstein? Rammstein?
I've never talked about them out loud before, so I don't know. I mean, I'm familiar with them through industrial music. They've never been a group that I've listened to a lot directly, but occasionally they're involved or they have some involvement with another act. I think there's a Meshuggah did a remix of one of their tracks, or they did a remix of a Meshuggah track years back, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, so at first I didn't believe this claim about Twin Peaks, because I was thinking, wait a minute, that show came out before Rammstein was a band, or at least before this song came out. But then I realized it was referring to the recent Revival series, and it is, what Pamela says is true. I dug up a clip. There is a clip of David Lynch in costume, in character, as like an FBI agent, whistling this Rammstein song, and that's pretty weird. I would have had no idea what kind of music David Lynch listened to, but if I had to guess, I would think he was like, I don't know, listening to weird experimental music that was just like pitch modulation of people screaming. Or you could go totally the other way and say it's all entirely like ambient jazz.
Well, at any rate, Pamela, thanks for writing in. It's interesting.
Okay, we got a lot of Return to Oz to get to, so I think maybe we should go straight to the Weird House responses.
Let's do it.
All right, this first message comes from D. D says, "Hello, Joe, Rob, and Seth. First off, thank you for the hours upon hours of education and entertainment I've gotten. I've been a regular listener since I took a job that required a monstrous commute back in 2017. I still remember the first episode I listened to on my first day on the job, Talos, the Bronze Automaton, and I've been hooked ever since."
That was a fun episode.
Oh, yeah. "I'd wanted to write several times before, but hadn't gotten to it. But your recent Weird House on Return to Oz finally pushed me over the edge. I believe Robert had asked about people who had seen this, notably in the theater, and what their impressions were. I'll relate a story as part of that. My parents were divorced in the early 1980s, and as divorced parents are wont to do, my dad would take me to the movies as it was a fun bonding experience, and he was a fan of Weird House before it was a thing, having worked for David Cronenberg in the early 70s.
Well, that would do it.
This is a Cronenberg legacy email. D continues. "The challenge was that his picks for child-appropriate cinema were suspect. This being the late 1980s and his background in the arts being what it was, many selections, even if child-friendly, ended up being a little too dark. He'd already caught flack in the months prior for taking 7-year-old me to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And VCRs were an expensive luxury, this being the era when many people rented the player as well as the movies. So he figured that Return to Oz would be a nice, safe pick among what was playing at the time. It ended up being worse. 7-year-old me may have thought that Mola Ram's heart extraction scene was pretty cool and that the dinner scene was awesomely gross," referring to Temple of Doom. "But Return to Oz gave me nightmares for days afterwards. I'd kept swearing I'd seen faces in the wallpaper at night. Mombi's Hall of Heads made my hair stand on end, and I still find the wheelies creepy to this day. There was really something special about children's films from the late 1970s and early 1980s. My father, bless him, did rent a VCR for our next family movie night, only to unintentionally terrify us further with what I think would make an excellent Weird House selection, 1978's Watership Down, which is a, quote, movie based on a book about bunny rabbits, in the same way that Cujo is, quote, a movie based on a book about a dog. He really could not win. Regardless, thank you for the great work that you do. I appreciate the thoroughness, levity, and enthusiasm you throw into your topics. You're my go-to podcast and easily top of the heap. Please keep up the great work, D."
Oh, well, that was great. I mean, like you say, there's a David Cronenberg connection in this email. Mentions some other, you know, thoroughly strange films in their own way. I've never seen Cujo. It just never was a film that called to me, nor a book that called to me. And I don't think I ever watched Watership Down either, but I've listened to the Art Garfunkel song from Watership Down, Bright Eyes, a lot. That's a real heart-wrencher.
I haven't seen Watership Down. I have seen Cujo. Don't know if I'd recommend it. It's not a very fun time.
Yeah. I mean, does the dog even talk?
No, it's a movie about rabies. I mean, it's just not very fun.
It's so weird to look back at those early King novels. And I don't think that, I think Salem's Lot is the earliest King novel I actually read. But you look back at some of them and it's like, here's a guy who had so many ideas and would continue to bust out so many great ideas. But if you were just looking at those first few novels, you might wonder how much was really in the tank, right? Because it's like the psychic girl novel, and there's psychic boy in a hotel novel, killer dog novel. It maybe didn't look like there was like a ton of variety ready, that, you know, inside that head charged to take over the world. But it turns out there was. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. Astepro Allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, this one comes to us from Beck. Beck says, hello from Sydney, Australia. I was so excited to see this podcast episode. I saw Return to Oz as a child when it came out, and it was my absolute favorite movie. Even now, as an adult, I think about saying Oz when I see a green figurine. It was the right level of scary as a kid, although the Wheelers particularly scared me. I had a similar mirror to the one Ozma appears in, and I would move it like Dorothy did in the hopes she'd appear in the mirror. For so long, no one I knew had seen or even heard of this movie. I only rewatched it again about 5 years ago, and it was amazing to watch it as an adult and pick up on so many things I missed as a kid. I also realized the VHS version I had taped from TV was slightly sanitized, so I discovered some new scenes, which was just thrilling. The movie inspired some of my fan art as well, and here's some labyrinth art too. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers, Beck.
And she includes several pictures here from her Instagram account. Beck's a great artist. I love these paintings.
Oh, yeah. There's Jack Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, there's Jack Pumpkinhead and Dorothy. Then there's, I think, Ozma holding a jack-o'-lantern. I think this is from the scene in the clinic where she, like, gives the pumpkin to Dorothy.
Oh, and there's Hoggle.
There's what?
Oh, sorry. I skipped ahead to Hoggle. Yeah.
From Labyrinth.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, the mirror thing is very interesting because, of course, that's one of the fun but also kind of haunting textures in Return to Oz, that Dorothy is in the real world trying to reconnect with Oz, and the adults in her world do not understand this, and they think this is a problem. And as a viewer, we're kind of, we since we don't really see Oz manifest at that point in the film, we're kind of led to believe this as well. Like, this doesn't, maybe there's a, the scene is a little creepy early on because we kind of buy into this idea that the adults are telling us, like Dorothy needs to get her head back on the ground here because she is becoming too fascinated with the imaginary.
And those attempts to reconnect with Oz are part of that.
I think there is something poignant there too. Yeah. Of the return to Oz, the desire to return to something, which as adults, of course, we all have feelings of nostalgia and perhaps a more nuanced understanding and realistic understanding of what it is to return to some of these ideas that previously engaged us so and captured our imagination. But I feel like there is that time period as a child where you're still so close to the imaginary being real. That you can reach back and you can the ability to sort of reach out and grab hold of these things is more real, you know, because they haven't really drifted that far from you, be it some sort of a belief, be it something like the Easter Bunny or something, or something, you know, more poignant than that. Like you're closer to them, you're closer to the dream. And sometimes it is an actual dream. Like I remember like having dreams, vivid dreams as a child, and there was a feeling when you woke up from them that they were still within reach.
Yes, I remember that feeling too. I mean, this is something that definitely comes through, and I think especially a lot of, you know, fantasy literature, because it is made by adults, and a lot of what's going on is nostalgia for the child's power to believe that, like, you wish in a way that you could at least temporarily reoccupy that mind space where things that are impossible for you to believe now seemed more plausible.
Yeah, and occasionally you do find authors that are able to really capture all of this. I think there's a Richard Matheson short story about a little boy who believes that he's a vampire. And of course, this is a Richard Matheson story, so it's a chiller. You know, it's a horror, it's a thriller, it's all that. He's going for a totally different vibe. But if I remember, like it's one of these. It's a short story, but it brings you right to this point in the story where you're not sure which way is going to go. Like the boy believes he is a vampire, and he is either about to have that belief crushed by the realities of the grown-up world, or it's going to go in the other direction. It's going to go into that direction that veers into the supernatural, and you don't really know which way it's going to go. Both directions, like one I guess is heartbreaking, and the other is potentially horrific as well because it involves vampires.
Right.
By the way, I just looked it up. I think the name of the short story is Blood Sun. But it's been a long time since I've read it, but I remember it now as being quite good at the time.
All right, this next message is from Pat, also about Return to Oz. Pat says, "Guys, another great Weird House. I also feel regret in having missed the original release. I remember word of mouth being particularly bad. I have since developed a wariness of peer pressure. I would have loved this movie. I paused your podcast to watch the film. Firouza Balk is an actress with a special identity. Who is like her? She's so good in this film. If I knew Nicole Williamson was in it, I would have seen it earlier. I am a big fan. I recall seeing him in a Vanity production on Broadway, which is called Jack, A Night on the Town with John Barrymore. And by the way, I looked this up. It looks like it was a one-man show with Nicole Williamson as the famous American stage actor John Barrymore, who I think was active in the first half of the 20th century. Pat goes on about Williamson. He was powerful and hilarious. I recall a mean-spirited reviewer referring to his performance as, quote, one drunk playing another. Who is to say, but as a guy who loves his whiskey, I thought Nicole was drinking during the performance. But Pat goes on, I don't think Return to Oz had very much to do with the classic film. Rather, it's a tribute to the original stories. The dual role of Worley and the Gnome King is an opportunity to explore fantasy in the mind of a child and adults' inability to understand. We were all children, but when most of us grow, we build barriers to childish fantasy, not balm, referring to the author of the books. As always, thanks for the great job of analysis. Please do keep it up, Pat.
That's a good point about Baum, kind of a William Blake figure in that respect.
Man, I would love to see a live one-man performance by Nicole Williamson.
It sounds like it could have been a precarious situation, though, if you don't know exactly how it's going to go. But again, he was a great actor. So if he is going to excel anywhere, it's going to be on the stage or in front of the camera. All right, this next one comes to us from Nadja. Nadja writes, "Dear Robert and Joe, I wanted to write into you guys as I was particularly delighted by your episode on Return to Oz, which I was lucky enough to see in the cinema way back when. I would have been about 8 or 9 at the time, and I found the darker scenes at of the film being deliciously scary. They grounded the plot in reality somehow, and even though by that age I knew places like Oz or Narnia couldn't be real, starting off the movie from a point where Dorothy was under threat from an evil psychiatrist because of her delusions seemed a much more palpable and realistic threat than a tornado, to someone who doesn't live in Tornado Alley, at least. By the time I saw Return to Oz, I'd already seen quite a few disturbing adult films, such as Brazil, the Twilight Zone movie, and parts of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, so Return to Oz was a fun level of dark atmosphere in comparison. I remember that when the movie came out in Perth, the main bookshop stocked reprints of the Oz sequels. OMG, I never knew there was more than one book. The sequels were never listed in my copy of Wizard of Oz, and our local library only had the original, so I literally never knew there was a treasure trove of Oz books. A very happy day for me indeed. Further on Oz Media, there is a young adult series of books set in the Oz, beginning with Dorothy Must Die. In this series, Dorothy and her companions are the evil rulers of Oz. The Scarecrow does vile experiments on captured citizens. The Tin Man is a slasher, and the Lion a man-eater. Mombi is part of an underground resistance movement fighting the evil regime. Oz characters also make many appearances in the Vertigo series Fables, and of course there's a Jack Pumpkinhead in The Sandman, though he's not a sweet, innocent character, more like a groundskeeper Willie. The original Oz movie was something I was absolutely obsessed with since I saw it on TV when I was around 5. I remember checking the TV guide every week to see if it would be on again, and every couple of years I was rewarded by another showing. Ah, the days before VCR. However, this brings me to my next movie obsession, which was Excalibur. My uncle, who worked with computers and was the only technophile in the family, lent us his VCR for a week. Knowing I was a kid into Arthurian legends, one of the videos he included was Excalibur, which I watched at least once a day for that week. The movie completely blew my mind. Even the fact of it being a seriously cut-down version of the original saga couldn't spoil it for me. To this day, I can conjure up various scenes in my head, along with the Wagnerian score, and every time I hear Karl Orff's Carmina Burana, I see knights galloping on horseback in my mind. I think this movie would make a great Weird House Cinema. It has some great actors, such as Patrick Stewart and Helen Mirren. And seriously, the very best Merlin ever committed to film. Sorry, Sam Neill, you were good, but not that good. I never realized it was the same actor as the Gnome King / psychiatrist, but to be fair, I was only 6 or 7 when I saw Excalibur. The sets and costumes look great, and the whole movie is extremely atmospheric. Yes, I've seen it since, and parts of it have aged a little poorly, but along with Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I think it's the best adaptation of the Arthurian legends. Nadja.
Wow, thanks, Nadja. So now I'm really starting to feel left out not having seen Excalibur. That was the same director as Deliverance, right?
Yeah, it was John Borman.
Oh, as Deliverance and same director as The Exorcist 2.
Yes.
How that happened, I have no idea.
Yeah, major director. He directed The Emerald Forest.
Zardoz.
Oh, Zardoz. That's one I've never seen. It's well known for its weirdness, but I don't think that's one we could quite cover on Weird House.
Yeah, it's been a while. I recall it having some kind of bummer elements if we were to do it on the show. But at the same time, it does have, like, the parts that are good are really good. It's got Sean Connery in, like, this weird red Speedo costume with a ponytail and a mustache. And
flying heads, right?
Flying head in the sky. Oh, and for a weird connection. Now, maybe you should switch off the podcast now if you don't want any spoilers for this 1970s movie. But to spoil the ending of Zardoz, it's a movie about a like dystopian future with a sort of imposed mythology that is actually based on the Wizard of Oz. Zardoz is a shortening of the Wizard of Oz. That's like the twist ending.
Yeah, see, it comes back to what we were talking about in the Return to Oz episode. Like, you can feel however you feel about the original Wizard of Oz film or the Wizard of Oz books, but like, the Wizard of Oz has just been so influential in fiction and fantasy that you can't separate it. You can't remove it. Like, the pee is in the pool at this point.
Yep. The pee is even in Zardoz.
Well, we'll have to look at. I haven't seen Excalibur in forever. I'll have to look back at it and make sure it would be a good pick. But it's very shiny. It's a very shiny film, and I don't think have we covered anything that has Arthurian elements in it thus far.
I don't know. Not that
has Merlin shown up. Merlin showed up in something, right?
Yeah, why not?
Surely Merlin has showed up in a Weird House film already. I would be surprised if he hasn't. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Okay, well, either way, I got to watch Excalibur. But I think that does it for today's mailbag.
That's right. We'll go ahead and close it up today, but we'll be back. So keep them coming. We do listener mail every Monday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We do core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, a short form monster fact or artifact on Wednesdays. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a weird film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.